Hello and welcome to the BizNews News Wrap, our daily show summarizing the top takes from BizNews. It's Monday, the 4th of November. I'm Lucy Ferreira. Before we get started, remember that these clips are just teasers from the full interviews and articles. For the complete stories, visit biznews.com or tune into the BizNews Briefing streamed live at 7 a.m. on weekdays with Alec Hogg. You can find the link on our homepage. And now into the headlines for today's show. We go straight into an update on the run-up to the US elections with our partners at Bloomberg. And political killings and corruption. An expose on the political interference within the South African Police Service and calls for disbandment. This is followed by Makone Maja of the IRR on the decline of Johannesburg and the urgent action needed to address its water crisis. Sticking with political analysis, BOSA's Musi Maimane criticizes the DA-ANC coalition, citing missed opportunities for reform. And then UIM President Neil de Beer claims that potential ANC presidential candidate Paul Mashatile's controversial land policy is merely a distraction from corruption allegations. And lastly, in an optimistic interview, Pick n Pay CEO Sean Summers celebrates the strategic eBucks partnership with FNB and unlocking exciting new opportunities for the company. First up, over to our partners at Bloomberg.
When you look at the key takeaways, first, do you believe the polls and how close are they?
Right. So if you believe all the polls, this is neck and neck, a dead heat. There are two theories of the case. One is that the polls are undercounting women voters and how angry they are with the Dobbs abortion decision and that they're going to come out in record numbers for Harris. The other theory is that actually Republicans are coming out in really strong numbers, that Trump has gotten historic support amongst male voters, increased support amongst black male voters, and that he could win the day. So it's really hard to tell. There has been a lot of discussion that the polls are noisy because there are a lot of right-wing leaning polls in the mix that are relying on faulty data. So it's going to be really hard to tell. I will be looking at Georgia and North Carolina, the first East Coast states to be reporting. There will be about 16 East Coast states closing at 7 p.m. Eastern time, midnight in London. And Georgia and North Carolina are, they count votes quickly. So I'll be looking at those polls and what they're indicating.
But Stephanie, this could be a very contested election and it could take, so you're looking for these two swing states to kind of give us an indication, but it could take, I guess, many even weeks to find out who is president.
It really depends on how close this is. Yeah, if it is very close, we could be in for a long haul. Pennsylvania looks very close. There are already lawsuits over some registrations there. So it depends. If it's neck and neck and we're down to a few thousand votes, this could last for quite a while. What's clear is that I think the House race will take a lot longer to settle, as will the Senate. But I think that this could be a quicker result depending on the margin of error.
In a recent BizNews article, an AI-generated version of Chris Stein's voice presents her writing, emphasizing Professor Mary de Haas's critical letter to Police Minister Senzo Mkunu and Parliament highlighting the alarming rise in what is referred to as political killings, interference, and policing.
The dark triad of political killings, political interference, and political policing have been laid bare in a letter with detailed case studies sent to Police Minister Senzo Mkunu and Parliament. It was compiled by Professor Mary de Haas, who has been monitoring and researching political violence in KwaZulu-Natal for 40 years and has kept detailed records covering that period. In her latest letter to the minister, she implores him to instruct SAPS National Commissioner General Fanny Mazamola to immediately disband the political killings task team, send its investigators back to detective units, and set up a completely independent oversight body. She also calls for an immediate end to the deployment of General Dumisani Kumalo, who heads the Crime Intelligence Service, CIS, to this task team, which he did not have the qualifications and experience to command in the first place. Professor De Haas describes how, at the end of 2022, General Kumalo was appointed by then Minister Kele to head SAPS crime intelligence, having no training or experience in that field either. So he currently occupies both positions. She asks, why has he been allowed to occupy both these positions, for neither of which he has qualifications at the same time? In answering, she informs the minister that former disgraced SAPS National Commissioner Beki Cele, who is himself implicated in at least two serious criminal cases which have been opened, is believed to have arranged the placement of Kumalo in the political killings task team. Despite his never having had experience as a detective, he seems to have also handled resources and to have run up huge operating expenses, according to various sources. She adds, he became its head and was promoted to the rank of general, which was a gross travesty of justice.
And now from failures at the SAPS to Johannesburg's ever-worsening infrastructure crisis. As Makone Maja compares the city's decay in stark terms to that of Pretoria's.
Johannesburg is in greater decay than the city of Tshwane. And so I think perhaps for residents of Johannesburg, it's in a much worse condition just driving around Joburg CBD in comparison to the Tshwane CBD. There's a big differences as different as day and night, right? But I think there are still a lot of issues that both those municipalities need to address, specifically with respect to the water crisis. So on that account, I'd say they're both playing politics because they're both facing a very great problems should this water crisis materialize. So yeah, Gauteng, Johannesburg really is in a lot of trouble. And what we're considering is some of the legal action that can be taken to compel municipalities to at least address the leakages, because the leakages are accounting for some 30 to 40% water losses. This is potable, safe drinking water that's just being lost to poor and non-action on maintaining the pipeline and water network infrastructure. So we're looking at ways in which we can begin to compel those municipalities to perform the requisite maintenance. You had one of the municipalities in Johannesburg indicates that of the 42 reservoirs they have in place, they only have a budget to maintain 20 of the leakages of those 42. I mean, that is unacceptable. So there's just not, there's a lack of political will, I would say, on the part of these municipalities to really address those issues. But it's a perfect time for residents to get involved. Water affects us directly, just as electricity did. And there's no reason for us to sit on our laurels and expect that things would change. We should really take up action.
Former DA leader Musi Maimane now questions the DA's coalition with the ANC in the government of national unity, citing concerns over policy compromises.
Musi, my big question for you is the ANC does appear to be operating just as it was doing before it went down to 40% of the vote. If you were still the leader of the Democratic Alliance, would you have done this deal of the government of national unity?
It is a very difficult question, because compared to what is the question, right? And I think part of the success of the GNU is reliant on the fact that the alternative, in some instances, you would then have to form a much bigger coalition that combines EFF, MK, etc. So I think I would have done what I would have done, though, is done it a little bit more differently. I would have forced the direct coalition with the ANC. But more seriously, if I was to do that, there are some policy issues that needed to be fought for, or that government doesn't stand. My greatest worry now is to your point. The ANC, all it's done, it's lost its numbers, augmented with the DA and added a few cabinet ministers with the patronage that goes with it, and there's been silence. It is outstanding to me that the DA still stands strongly on the ANC, something they opposed, race-based legislation. They've gone for it now. They're defending it in all corners. A bloated cabinet, a bloated civil service. All of these, when I looked at the tabling of the budget this week, it may be a balancing act, but in all reality, it lacks a very strong reform economic plan. It's more of the same, to your point. It's not just around corruption that the ANC or anything like that has kept going. It's also about issues such as how do we ensure that there's an economic reform? And I haven't seen any of the DA or any other party's economic policy finding any expression, even in the financing of the issue. So to me, I think if you were going to force the issue, you needed to make sure that it is foreground on policy rather than personality or party.
The UIM's Neil De Beer now blasts Deputy President Paul Mashatile's push for land expropriation without compensation.
May we start with Deputy President Paul Mashatile, who has reaffirmed government's commitment to expropriation of land without compensation.
Yeah, of course, I think clearly a very huge hit back from Paul Mashatile, but not surprising. I am part of the South African citizenry that says that whatever Paul Mashatile says, I always put in front of it dockets. We cannot forget, and we will not forget on this Sunday show, that we are true to the belief that the vice president of this country should be impeached and should be set in front of court. Now, it is not going to go away. And if we have to every month, elke liewe Sondag, put the Paul Mashatile little sticker on the top saying to be charged. So I am sorry as a person that whatever Paul Mashatile tells me, I will always say, but to be charged. Because what happens in this country, Paul, Paul thinks that we are going to forget about matters if he continuously focuses now on land without compensation, which is a massive strike of him trying to now become relevant, because other people who we will talk about this week are now making themselves more relevant than him who is supposed to be the candidate to be the next president. So either charge this man according to what the DA delivered pre-GNU, which are horrific charges of corruption, horrific charges of actually being part of miscellaneous matters that are lying underneath the earth on terrible charges of corruption. But now this man comes and he says, but no, forget about that. That will come. Let's take land without compensation and I will lead that. So I think there needs to be a bit of thinking. He needs to be charged because those dockets are not going to go away. And I think until then, Chris, the real people of this country are not going to take him serious. So we are sitting in a quagmire where we've got people in the GNU who laid those matters in public and who are currently serving under him and saying nothing. So I think it was a little bit of a, I want to be relevant for a while. And he chose a matter that is very sensitive, not just to the people of this country, but also to the economy. Because if you get up and you say we are going to take your land and that we are not going to have people that have title deed respected in this country, then Chris, what real serious foreign direct investor will come into this country and say, I will buy a piece of land, I will build a factory and I will employ people? I think this is an absolute scourge and he's got it wrong and we should be watching this with a very, very big microscope.
And lastly, Sean Summers reflects on Pick n Pay's turnaround journey and the importance of focusing on quality operations amid challenging market conditions.
Well, somebody has really been at it, and congrats on the deal that you struck with First Rand or FNB on eBucks. It's a big win for Pick n Pay if you consider what you're up against with Checkers and so forth. Just unpack what it means and how you put it together.
I think it's a huge win for us, Alex. The eBucks thing is massive. It is a huge hit. I mean, it's the most popular loyalty scheme that is in the country. They distributed about $2.4 billion to their clients last year as part and parcel of that. And it's the start of a journey for us with them. We've got some very, very exciting stuff that we're working on in the background that will be revealed in the next couple of months. And a lot of these things have to be technologically enabled first, as you understand, you know, just to get these devices to work at the end of the day. And some of the things that we're going to be launching just takes a little bit of time. But it's off to a great start already, and I think it's going to be wonderful for us going forward. And it's just great to see the confidence that FNB have placed in Pick n Pay and our turnaround.
How did you land it, though? Because FNB has got the whole world that it can choose from. You are going through, as you said, a turnaround. It's tough times. We saw that in your interims last week. So how did you get them to believe the story?
I think, you know, Alex, one of the difficulties, I mean, obviously they have sight of what's going on behind, because on the other side of the wall, they are also significant funders of ours in the RMB process. And if you have a look at the current listings and the rights offer, so they certainly have good look through as to where we are and dial out the noise. They've got a good view under the hood of where Pick n Pay is, what the journey is that we are on, and what the trajectory is. We still have a very significant base in the company. I mean, we're in excess of 100 billion enterprise. So when you read all of these stories about, oh, Pick n Pay can't stand a chance, it hasn't got the scale, ShopRite Checkers are growing at this pace, you know, sure, all of those things are realities in the sideline, but you have to ask, what does it really mean commercially at the end of the day? From next year, we will be in a situation that we'll be able to start reinvesting in our very, very beautiful geographic fleet of stores that we have. And I mean, we've still got some extraordinary centers that we're in, but that are just terribly underinvested. And, you know, part and parcel of that journey is not only rehabilitating the stores, it's about rehabilitating the people as well. You know, it's a year ago since I walked into this building. And, you know, I always use the analogy, you know, when I came back here a year ago, I sadly couldn't find a pulse. You know, everybody, most people were working from home. It was still the tail end of that sort of era. And Lorena and a couple of the finance people who were sitting here like deers in the headlight trying to just sort of keep things turning over. But for the balance, there really was no pulse in the company. I mean, I had a supplier last week who said to me, Sean, you need to know this. He said, it's been more than a decade since I've walked into your buyer's offices and gone around the company and heard laughter and positivity and people talking about the future. And he said, you just need to know it. I just wanted to share it with you. So I said to him, well, thank you very much, because, you know, those are the things really at the end of the day that get you through these times and actually develop more character and make us stronger. So I think at FNB certainly has seen the change in cadence in the organization. They've been around to see it firsthand, and we're very honored that they've joined us and we've been allowed to join them.
And that brings us to the end of today's news wrap. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you tomorrow.